From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in July when a new restaurant and wine bar quietly opened on Cayuga Lake. During the pandemic, we have sadly seen a number of bars and restaurants close across New York State. So what was this new place doing, opening in a small Finger Lakes town with so much uncertainty about COVID and when this ends? The story was interesting enough before we found out the origins. This was not any ordinary restaurant opening, and it's not going to be here permanently. The restaurant is located in a town called Interlaken on Cayuga Lake. It's called Supernatural Lake, and it's straight from Manhattan. New York City was, of course, the epicenter of the American COVID outbreak this past spring. Restaurants and bars closed. It was a tragic and frightening time. People were losing family or friends or their livelihoods. And one of the hottest Manhattan wine bars was not guaranteed to make it past this pandemic. That wine bar is called La Compagnie de Vin Surnatural, French for the Supernatural Wine Company. Here's just one of many reviews of La Compagnie, this one from VinePair.com. Quote, "There are a lot of places to drink in New York City, yet one bar, situated on an unremarkable stretch of the city's Soho-Chinatown divide, is hands down the hottest industry hang. If you are out on the town with sommeliers, visiting winemakers, off-the-clock servers, or anyone else in the business, it's a safe bet that your evening will include at least one stop at La Compagnie de Vin Surnatural," end quote. So how did this thermonuclear hot wine bar in Manhattan end up transplanted for the summer to the middle of the Finger Lakes? That's what we aim to find out this hour. From our perspective, it's clear that while New York City was still largely closed and hurting, other regions had the advantage of reopening sooner. The team at La Compagnie wasn't exactly sure what they would do for the summer or how long they'd have to stay closed. And then someone from the team maybe heard about a little spot in the Finger Lakes right on the water, plenty of space to run a kitchen, outdoor seating, views of the lake, room for music and revelry. So they apparently rounded up some trucks, put some of the La Compagnie wine list in the back, and headed upstate for the summer. This world-class Manhattan hangout has quietly been operating in the heart of our region and will be there until the end of October, upon which time it will just vanish back into the ether like it never happened. My first meal at a restaurant since March happened at Supernatural Lake. I didn't know what to expect. Here's what I found. Plenty of space for safe seating, a happy and welcoming staff, at least some of whom are also transplanted from Manhattan, and renting on Cayuga Lake. The menu, fresh, food was borderline addictive. It's not meant to sound like an ad. Rather, this is a story of survival, innovation, and an unlikely Finger Lakes visitor. Did you know that a world-class wine bar had relocated to Interlaken during the pandemic? Me neither. There have been some painful stories of closure, of a real concern about what happens next in this industry in the future, downsizing, staff cuts, and more, all across the country. Well, now, a different kind of story. Welcome to the program, the managing partner for La Compagnie. Caleb Ganser is on the line with us. Caleb, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for that. Thanks for having us.
You got it. Eric Bouillard is a chef and partner with La Compagnie as well, and Supernatural Lake. Eric, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, amazing. Super happy to be here.
Well, in many ways, I want this to be a kind of an hour that we're going to touch on understanding what Caleb and Eric and the whole team have experienced in Manhattan, the hurt that people were going through there, the uncertainty of the entire industry, but also what a cool story this is. And I did my best to kind of reconstruct it as I know it, but I'm sure I got some things wrong. So Caleb, will you take me back through the spring here and kind of give me a sense for what was going on in Manhattan? Obviously, we know it was the epicenter. Kind of take me through, you know, the late winter into spring when this was all happening, and what your mindset was just trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah, Evan, thanks so much for that beautiful intro. I mean, I think you nailed pretty much all of it. With the only exception I'll say is that, you know, while we brought the vibe of Compagnie's wine list up here, we actually bought all the wines new when we got here.
Oh.
So, we can't actually transfer inventory unless you have a specific license, which we do not have.
I was literally getting you in trouble with an incorrect...
Just a little caveat there. Make sure everybody listens to the full story. But no, I mean, you know, what I'm so proud of this, you know, this summer and this and this move was that, you know, we have a team in New York that, you know, is ready for kind of anything at all times. Like, we throw events kind of, you know, sometimes a day, you know, we'll plan it 24 hours in advance. Sometimes we come up with an idea that afternoon and put on Instagram and we do it. So we, you know, our team is like super tight, ready to go. And you know, in March when we had to close down the actual wine bar operations, you know, we've been building this whole company for about 5 years and just had a lot of momentum going into this. And we'd actually had our best week ever prior to COVID. There was a big wine industry in town, wine industry event. And it was just that we were riding super high, and then like all this just kind of came crashing down. And, you know, we got together, we had a meeting, we were chit-chatting about closing down for a little bit or just moving some stuff online and downsizing and taking pay cuts. And, you know, we had to furlough, you know, 2/3 of our team, and we were getting reports as we were having this like close down meeting that we could potentially start selling wine to go, which was certainly encouraging. The SLA loosened the restrictions on restaurants selling, you know, only on premise. Now we could sell off premise. So even before we had final clarification on that, we were, you know, pretty much looking for rental cars and figuring out how we were going to, you know, do rent, you know, delivery. So flash forward to, you know, 3 months into delivering, which, you know, they did end up doing, and they extended all the restrictions, or they loosened the restrictions. And, you know, we're delivering for 3 months, you know, Eric's delivering, Sarah's delivering, you know, our team, Sam, our general manager's coordinating, Hannah, you know, our controller, kind of making sure all the bills are getting paid and that we have, you know, the right cash flow. And, you know, so we have a good team doing all this, but, you know, we're restaurant people, we're hospitality people. We didn't get into this business to deliver, you know. I mean, we're happy to stay alive and figure out what we can do so we can keep being a restaurant. But, you know, we started dreaming, we started looking online and thinking about maybe we could rent, you know, some Airbnb stuff or find a hotel that closed down or whatever, and just, you know, have people come up and they could stay and we could sell them wine from the wine bar. And, you know, we were just like trying to get as creative as possible, just out of survival really. And also just survival of like the passion that, you know, allows us to do what we do. And we found this place randomly through Airbnb.
Airbnb?
We were just browsing, like, and I was like looking like long-term experiences for like, you know, a bunch of people. And I found this place right on Cayuga, that had, you know, 4 little cottages, another house on the property. And I called the landlord right away, and I was like, hey, like, you know, is there a way we can do a long-term deal? Like, you guys are, you know, I think they were in phase 2 or 3 at the time up here. So, you know, they were already doing, you know, outdoor dining, let alone, you know, partial indoor. And we came up here, and this was also right at the time that the riots were happening in the city, you know, after the death of George Floyd. And, you know, it was, the epicenter was kind of downtown right where we were. And, you know, every night there'd be, you know, late nights of, you know, folks coming through, and, you know, there were peaceful protests, but, you know, there was also, some of them got a little out of hand at some point, you know, for whatever reason. But either way, we were boarding up our windows. We're just like looking around being like, you know, like delivering wine is not that big of a deal right now. We need to like chill out and take a moment and just take a pause. And so we ended up closing down for a week, boarded up, and then found a rental property on Seneca Lake, brought our whole team who was still working, you know, at the time up. And then the next day we came over here and saw the spot, and we saw the cottages, we saw the lake. It was beautiful. We saw the house. And then they were like, you want to go see the restaurant and the wine bar? We're like, what are you talking about? You have a restaurant on property too. And we go over, and, you know, so if anybody knows the area, this is the former Busy Bee over here in Interlaken, which, you know, was beloved by the community, had a lot of live music. It was like a market, had some sandwiches, a wine store, and we had no idea. But we show up here, and sure enough, there's a whole operation, you know, that's just been closed down for 2 years. And our current landlords had just bought it, started doing some renovations on it, and got it to a pretty good place where we were like, you know what, we could probably do a little pop-up here for a few months. And, you know, that kind of gets us to where we are today, which is doing a little pop-up here for a few months.
Is it the kind of thing where when you saw it, you knew pretty fast that was going to be it?
Yeah, I mean, like, the vision came together so clearly. I mean, we were all, like, luckily, you know, 4 of us had come over and toured the spot that day, and we were just brainstorming and chatting and, you know, being real excited. And, you know, it was like wine summer camp. We were like, oh, we could totally renovate these cottages, and we could totally, you know, spruce up the deck, you know, the interior, and just make it feel like a little outpost. Then we had to deal with all the legal stuff, you know, build a business and get the licensing and permitting and change the zone. But, you know, like, when that is your sole sort of, like, survival tactic for, like, just doing what you want to do, we all rallied, and in 2 months we had this place open. I mean, you know, the landlord and his extended network, you know, helped us out a ton. Like, it really took a village to get this thing open, but such a testament to like what, you know, a bunch of humans can do if you put your mind to something.
What did you think, Eric?
Well, I think the ironic part is that, you know, Caleb and I, being partners in Manhattan, we had wanted to do like some offshoot of company in Manhattan, in the city, for a while now. You know, we looked for a bit and nothing fell into place. You know, there wasn't the perfect space or the perfect landlord. So the funny part is, like, we come up here and like within minutes, we're like 100%. This is our next thing. This is going to be the first offshoot of company. Supernatural Lake, the name came like real fast. It has elicited a lot of different emotions in so many fun ways. And there was too much potential on this property to not take advantage of it. And we really like carved out the vision very quickly, and it took shape very quickly over the next few weeks with just the core team there. So it was really exciting. Definitely some challenges, but the rewards have far outweighed it. And being up here for these months so far has just been remarkable in the peak season of farming and produce and like the products that we've been seeking out and finding from suppliers and purveyors and farmers here has been remarkable. So definitely a good time to post up.
Is there any part of you, Eric, that could see La Compagnie having a somewhat permanent satellite here in the Finger Lakes based on this experience?
I mean, we love it as much as we say we do. And, you know, it only made sense that we did this in the first place here. We've taken annual field trips up here with a bunch of our city guests, these long day trips that are super intricate and planned out, and we see all these winemakers and eat great food. And we've done that for the last three summers. So we have a little network up here. It's very on brand with the wine region being so phenomenal and constantly evolving here. And, you know, it makes sense for us as a wine bar and restaurant, what we represent to overlap with this region. So Caleb and I definitely see potential to, you know, do another thing in spring, maybe a little earlier, but, you know, the property, who knows, between now and then, we don't even know what's going on next month, you know, these days. So it's month by month type of strategizing situation, but we definitely see us being able to do something here long term if we found the right place.
Sure. And you make an important point, Eric. I mean, that's going to be obvious to anyone who's just thinking about not only kind of grinding out the winter, but then asking, when do you think the pandemic winds down? What happens if we see, you know, case rates increase, you know, God forbid Manhattan and New York City again, but really everywhere? You know, would you have a need to sort of get out of Manhattan again next year? Obviously, we hope the answer is no. I know there's a lot of uncertainty. We're talking to Eric Bouillard and Caleb Ganser from Supernatural Lake, and it is a restaurant, wine bar. I mean, I guess what's the short description of what this is that you have there, Caleb?
You know, we call it, yeah, wine bar, bistro, cottages, and formerly, for a couple of weeks, live music venue.
Okay.
The SLA made that illegal real fast. For the state, you know, I think a few bad actors must have allowed crowds and stuff and not social distancing. But yeah, we had a couple really good, safe shows. We partnered with the Smith Opera House out of Geneva, New York, to make this place a venue. And yeah, it was very promising. And then, yeah, then the hammer came down on that. But yeah, so wine bar, bistro, live music, and cottages on the lake is what Supernatural Lake is.
It's in Interlaken, and it's on Cayuga Lake. We're talking to the partners behind this project that just all of a sudden pops up in the middle of the summer, a world-class Manhattan wine bar now essentially relocated. Though I don't know what's actually in La Compagnie's space. So I've got two quick questions on that, Caleb. Everything I'm reading says Soho or, you know, lower Manhattan. What part of New York do you say you're in, La Compagnie?
you know, I mean, I think technically it is considered Soho, but okay. I mean, you know, if you walk across the street, you're in Little Italy. If you walk down the street a block or two, you're in the heart of, you know, Chinatown. So it's, if you go up and over a block or two, you're in Soho. So it's kind of that, that beautiful crossroads of what New York is. It's like, you know, when does one thing end and the other begin?
Yep. And what's in La Compagnie space right now? What's happening there right now?
Well, so we've, you can't have indoor dining, but we can do off-premise wine retail. So the, essentially the seating area has been converted to like a warehouse. So we have a bunch of different wine packs, you know, sort of ready to go. We've, you know, the team has also done a really good job of taking our, we had a very popular in-person wine boot camp program that has gone online, and now we're selling classes, wine boot camp classes, you know, that go over Zoom with one of our instructors now, Vitaly. And so we're shipping things out to wherever we can legally, and we are still doing wine classes and selling wine packs for pickup or for local delivery. And then we have a few tables out on the streets. If anybody's seen it, you know, there's a New York Open Streets program. So we have a few, like, actually on the street. We built a little barrier, and there's a few on the sidewalk as well. You know, putting out some food, bringing some wines, and, you know, still, I mean, to this day, to this week, we have people saying, you know, they live in New York, and this is the first time they've been out since the pandemic. So, I mean, we're, we're 6 months in, so.
Yeah, it's wild. And if you could, I'll start with you, Caleb. I'd like to ask both of you, what was it like in New York City, in Manhattan, when things just got out of control? What was that like?
It was bleak. It was, I mean, it still is if you go there. I mean, it's coming back to life a little bit, but I mean, I just remember the days of I first started driving around. I was rent, you know, in a rental car, a zip car, and, you know, parking was very ample. There was nobody on the street. I'd be driving through Midtown after my shift of delivering, you know, on Broadway and like 42nd Street, and it's just dead. Nobody's out there. All you see is a few cops here and there. It's like 8 p.m. There's no traffic. You know, I was very kind of romantically driving around listening to Chet Baker and just like kind of like taking in the those blue times. But knowing that it was also like a very unique time to be a human alive in New York City. But, you know, it only got worse when, you know, when things started turning, you know, a little bit violent again around, and I don't think there's any particular actors in the protest. It's just, you know, that was just the surge of emotion that was happening. And so everybody was boarding up the windows, and, you know, especially in our neighborhood, we were super hard hit. We're right near, like, you know, the Louis Vuitton store and all that stuff. And, but there was, you know, as many boarded up windows as there were like positive murals of championing, you know, the desire for more social justice. So, I mean, it's like, it was a very complicated time. It was hopeful and all of that, but it was still, you know, bleak from like the landscape of like, you know, how many, you know, jobs are being lost and businesses were closing, and, you know, how the, you know, New York was already kind of on that tipping point of losing its personality of a lot of these independent businesses. And you just saw all those like left and right getting knocked out, and, you know, what's going to be back there is going to be chains and it's going to be banks. And, you know, it's a complicated time, and it still is. I think there's more optimism, but going into the cold months, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen. 25% indoor dining is encouraging, but, you know, it's not paying the bills per se.
I do imagine, Caleb, you never imagined that you could be driving around a mostly empty Manhattan. To see it that way had to feel apocalyptic almost.
Yeah, no, it was definitely surreal. And I mean, you know, yeah, it was surreal. That's all I can say, I guess.
Eric, what was it like for you? I mean, for those of us who were upstate here, and upstate, by the way, is not like 30 minutes outside Manhattan. You know, like we're upstate, man. We had our own issues, and we have had nearly 300 die in Monroe County from COVID-19. We're hopeful to keep the infection rates low. But of course, you know, you're watching the heartbreaking numbers, and knowing that every number is a human being out of New York City every day. Was it a frightening time? Was it like, especially late March into April? Was it, you know, just kind of trying to figure out how to navigate literally moving around physical spaces? What was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, apocalyptic was definitely the word that came to mind when Kayla was just kind of re-explaining that moment of him driving around, and he and I were doing most of the delivering for months on end there, just to keep down our costs, and we're doing whatever we could. And it was, I mean, I've lived in New York City for 15 years. I'm from the area. I'm diehard city boy, and it's literally once in a lifetime to have experienced it that way, for better or for worse. That's just what it was. But very unique and kind of hard to swallow in some ways. Being from and such a loyal New Yorker, I feel like there's definitely a little part of me that's been broken. And I think so many tens of thousands of people feel that way as well. As the months went on and on of continued kind of effects of COVID. So yeah, the city was kind of like silent and then an uproar overnight. And it was this weird dichotomy. You didn't really know how to, it kind of, the emotional roller coaster that we've all been on in so many different ways. I've just been trying to be really sensitive to everyone's unique situation. Any person that I encountered from a socially distanced fashion or on a Zoom call or just passing on the streets or driving by, I mean, people have had it really, really, really hard. And a lot of people have lost jobs and lost, you know, family and friends. So like you mentioned, just being sensitive to everything that's going on around you and like acutely aware of what's going on around you, I think has been the best way to kind of approach this time. From a business standpoint, from a personal standpoint, obviously there was a lot more time for reflection. And yeah, trying to just do something good out of what the cards that we've been dealt, you know, during this time. I think Supernatural Lake is a good representation of that mentality of just like, how can we pivot? How can we keep people employed? How can we bring some people, our guests, a bit of, you know, joy and satiation and comfort? And how do we get our New York City folks up for a breath of fresh air, literally and figuratively, in our cottages? So we're very sensitive to their, you know, the great escape from the city to get a little relief. And that's exactly why we're here. And anything we can do to share that and you know, provide that is why our main motive.
Talking to Eric Bouillard, Caleb Ganser, the team behind Supernatural Lake. It is a piece of Manhattan that is basically uprooted and come to the Finger Lakes during this pandemic summer and into the fall. They'll be here through the end of October. And I say here, that's on Cayuga Lake in the little town of Interlaken, about an hour 15 from Rochester. Easy drive, actually a beautiful drive. And it's an amazing story. I mean, it really is a story that when you tell people what they did in dealing with the pandemic in Manhattan, one of the hottest wine bars literally in the world, trying to figure out what are we going to do? And then you find a place in the Finger Lakes, you pick it up and you come here. I wonder what the region has said. I mean, I frankly wonder how many people still don't know about this. Caleb, what has the response been like locally? I mean, I say locally, sort of regionally locally.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, Eric touched on our fact that we definitely wanted to take care of New York folks that, you know, we had already kind of known and wanted to stay connected with. But, you know, we also knew that there were a lot of folks up here that we had met through, you know, the wine industry days. And, you know, Eric mentioned we'd come up here on like bus trips and we'd bring New York City folks to come see how beautiful this area was and taste the wines and eat the food and meet the people. And we just knew we had a really awesome opportunity to like plant some roots, to not only take care of folks that we know already, but like to meet new friends and meet new faces. And that's been one of the biggest joys out of all this is, you know, being here kind of, you know, in the cornfields, in the farms, on the water, you know, meeting fishermen, meeting winemakers, meeting grape growers, meeting farmers, taking care of folks from Ithaca, taking care of folks coming down from, you know, Buffalo, from Rochester. You know, we've met a lot of restaurateurs who are excited to have us here. A lot of wine lovers, and, you know, other sort of creative types, all sorts, you know, and that's just been really cool to kind of get to know a new market. You know, it's a different world up here. It's 5 hours away, you know, it's, from what we're used to. But we've loved meeting everybody up here, you know, it's been really cool to kind of find a sort of niche following who, you know, thankfully they're telling their friends and, you know, they're coming back and they're having a great time. And, you know, it's like kind of, you know, you said we sort of opened quietly, you know, we didn't really know what to expect. And, you know, we didn't want to put the word out too much and have us be inundated with, too many people. It's really nice to be able to kind of find a nice niche group of folks, and then they tell their friends, and they tell their friends, and that's how we built Company over the years. And
well, they're coming for you now, man. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people who hear your voice right now. How much of your staff has come up here, and where are they staying?
So yeah, we have about 12 folks up here with us now, and we came up, you know, with about 8 people total. We stay on premise. There's a house on premise where most of us stay. We were in some of the cottages when we first got here. Eric and his sous chef Adina were in the cottages when we were a super core team. And then we started getting busier and busier. And we were like, you know what, we're going to need to like get some more space. So we found a neighbor down the road who's got a house. So we're moved some people over there. So we have 2 houses up here for our New York City team. And then we've also hired, you know, a few local folks as well. To help us out. So it's probably 12 people, 8 from the city, 4 from the local area, more or less.
Wow. And I guess just getting used to the speed of it. Eric, it's a little bit of a different pace up here. What do you think?
Well, I mean, luckily, we started pretty lean on staffing, especially in the kitchen. We didn't know what to expect. And luckily, we got, you know, a pretty favorable response, and people started showing up pretty much as soon as we opened, especially, you know, the very close neighbors. They've been chomping at the bit since the Busy Bee closed for 2 years. Just kind of a shame that this beautiful space was sitting here, not really providing anything for the local community. But, I mean, kudos to our landlord, Joe, for, you know, getting it back into shape. And, you know, it's been really cool to see the same people walk by every morning. You know, we wave to everyone. It's an amazing little exchange. And we got busy pretty fast. Obviously, like, we needed to find the right market who really kind of understood our vision. And we wanted to cater to as many people as possible, but we still wanted to maintain, like, the integrity of what we do in the city. And I think, as Caleb said, we've kind of found that bunch of folks that are, you know, latching on to us, and it's a very organic word of mouth that we build businesses by. So it's gotten really busy, and I needed to call in some reserves from the city to come up and help in the kitchen. So on 3 different occasions, I've added one team member to the back of house, and now we're in a really good place where we can kind of do exactly what we intend to do and do it, I think, at a pretty high level. And we're representing ourselves and our food in the way that we want. So, yeah, the kitchen is it's more kitchen than I have in our little wine bar in Manhattan. So it's been fun to kind of flex the muscles of things that we can't necessarily cook there. And it's been really fun to create with more equipment, and also with the incredible product that's available. We've changed our entire network of suppliers. We did a lot of due diligence on finding people that were doing most thoughtfully and sustainably raised produce and animals. So we've been definitely taking advantage of that during this peak moment in the year. So yeah, it's been really encouraging to get a lot of people engaged in what we're doing. I used to come up here years ago as a child. I had family up here. My whole team makes fun of me because I always mention that to new people I'm meeting here, because I just have such a great appreciation for the region since I was a very young child for the first 15 years of my life. And it's really impactful and meaningful to come up here and 20 years later do commerce and create a community up here based on, you know, what we're providing. So it's kind of like this reverse hospitality that I had going on since I was young. And it's really cool to see that come take shape.
What's your earliest memory of the Finger Lakes, Eric?
Well, I had family in Ithaca and Dryden, Lansing, that region. And, yeah, the hiking through all of these trails and parks and Buttermilk and Tagannock and Freeman and Watkins Glen, that's stuff that I did since I was 3, 4, 5 years old. So
you're legit.
To revisit those places now, it's like a lot of very vivid memories have come back, and it just has me appreciating what we're doing here that much more. And the enthusiasm by which I'm able to share that is like full circle.
Wow. Talking to chef and partner Eric Bouillard from Supernatural Lake on Cayuga Lake, Caleb Ganser on the line with us as well, the managing partner. And they are the team from La Compagnie de Vin Surnatural in Manhattan. It is truly one of the hottest wine bars in the world, and had to figure out what to do this spring when so much had changed in New York City with the pandemic, the business closures mandated, just so much to kind of consider on how you kind of get through this. And they found a place through Airbnb in Interlaken on Cayuga Lake, came up and said, we're going to do it. We're going to do kind of a pop-up restaurant wine bar. They've got cottages, and they are open. And some listeners have asked, Michael wants to know, do they offer Finger Lakes wines on the list? Amanda wants to know about ours. We'll hit those on the other side of our only break. And we're also going to talk about how they see the future of the industry itself. A lot of their colleagues have, for example, written for New York Magazine and various pieces saying, on the other end of this pandemic, not every bar, not every restaurant is going to make it. And I wonder how Caleb and Eric view that, and how they view the significance of that challenge. Frankly, what they want from all of us, or maybe even government, to help bridge to get to the other side. And finally, I will ask Eric if he knows what the best thing on his own menu is, because I was part of a group that had just about everything. So we'll quiz him. It's all coming up on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, former Rochesterians living on the West Coast, Central and Southern California, San Francisco. What has life been like with the fires, with the orange skies? They tell us it's important for people to hear firsthand accounts for what life has been like. You will hear those accounts and will consider what it means. Coming up Monday on Connections. This is Connections, and we're talking about a piece of Manhattan in the Finger Lakes on Cayuga Lake, Supernatural Lake. Eric Bouillard, where are you online? What's the website?
You can go to supernaturallake.com. It brings us to our company page, but then separately also to Supernatural Lake page. So you'll be able to find all our menus and beautiful photos that one of our sommeliers takes of some food and some property here. So that's definitely where you want to go.
And Amanda wants to know your hours. So I know you're not only, you've got your menu, but you also do some different stuff on Fridays. Why don't you explain for the listeners?
Yeah, so our standard operating hours are Thursday through Monday. We like being open on Monday to have the opportunity for some industry folks to come through and share stuff that they don't normally get to on their day off. So Monday's a great night to see a good mix of local industry folks and regulars. So yeah, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. we take reservations on resi.com, and we have a juice bar in the morning. Amazing coffee from our friend in Manhattan who roasts in Brooklyn called Cafe Integral. We serve their coffee here at a juice bar. Tammy, our wellness and yoga instructor, that's also available. She fresh presses green juice, red juices, and watermelon juice. And we have these awesome coffees from our friend in the city, and some small food bites from the kitchen from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Thursday through Monday. So it's cool for passerbys and have a little snack and a fresh juice in the morning. And then, we're setting up all day. Right now, currently on Fridays, like you asked, we do a whole pig roast. So every single Friday thus far, since we've been up here, we've done a whole pig roast. That was actually opening night, coincidentally. So I'm getting amazing pig from a guy, Joe, in Ontario, New York, through Headwater Food Hub. Been really cool working with those guys. And so I'm getting a pig every week. We cured on Thursday. I've been cooking it since 9 a.m. this morning. I actually have someone tending to it right now because it's a crucial moment in that cooking process. But, so we'll get the pig off around 3:30 or 4, and then we'll carve it up and we'll serve it with a bunch of amazing, you know, very down-to-earth comfort sides, mac and cheese, braised collards, coleslaw, grilled corn with brown butter, and some corn cake with the late season peaches for dessert. So that's Friday. That's like one menu. It's a set menu. We do a vegetarian option as well on the grill. And then the rest of the week we serve our full menu. So that's kind of a fun day to break things up.
So what is the best thing on your full menu?
That's a really unfair question.
No, because there's, I mean, everything is great, but there's one obvious answer.
Honestly, the funny thing is, and people probably won't expect me to say this because it's not the brisket from this amazing local, you know, farm. It's not the whole half chicken that I love so much. But I'd say the best thing on our menu are the crispy fried potato wedges with sour cream and onion dip that we make with a lot of integrity. I think kind of being up here doing what we're doing is like, how do we strip down and use restraint and celebrate the ingredient, and how do we make that ingredient as good as it possibly can be? And that humble potato and the classic potato wedge, we figured out a way to do it really well. It's cooked three times. We make an incredible like sweet onion puree and then season that up, and it's like very obvious what it is, but hopefully the experience is elevated and eating something like you've never really had.
Okay, well, who am I to argue with you? You're the chef, and I will say I couldn't agree though more with the way you describe the menu. It's just it is uncomplicated, it is direct, and everything just shines. But your lemon spaghetti changed my view of pasta for the rest of my life. You ruined it.
Oh, well, that's really wonderful to hear. I always have a pasta on a menu, literally no matter where I am, what we're doing, what the concept is. I just like have to have a one pasta on the menu. We always do at Company. And here I felt like I needed to as well, just because of such a passion of mine. A lot of our influence cooking comes from where I've cooked overseas in Spain and Italy and London. And there's always that one dish that we need to have as a pasta. So as far as simplicity, yeah, it's three ingredients. It's finding like this most amazing spaghetti I've found in Italy as far as what I'm able to get here in America. And yeah, just doing that with a few other ingredients and letting it speak for itself. That's the idea.
And the dessert, I think, had a cornbread base, and it was incredible too. Can you describe some of what you've been doing there?
Yeah, so that was the peach corn cake. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a fun little play on sweet cornbread. We get this amazing local organic cornmeal, and it's a sweet kind of textural corn cake with a upside down caramelized peach, peaches we're getting from Wyckoff Farms up the road, and love supporting them. And my chef Adina, who's been super creative and helpful this summer in the kitchen, she definitely has influenced some of the creativity behind that dessert. And we're making all our ice creams in-house, so just like an amazing vanilla bean ice cream, and then we swirl some caramel into it for another dessert. So yeah, we're just trying to make as much as physically possible ourselves. I think the only thing we're not making from scratch is our bread, but I'm using a really beautiful place in Trumansburg for bread. So other than that, yeah, we're just trying to build as much as we can in-house and use, you know, Caleb and I consider farmers as rock stars, we always say. So doing justice to those products and like creating from scratch everything this summer has been kind of the name of the game.
I think our listeners are finding that this is a great way to end the week. It's the kind of a little bit of a pivot, because I think we all need to occasionally get our mind in different directions here. We've spent a lot of time in this program, understandably so, and we will, on both the pandemic and all of the movement toward justice that follows both George Floyd and Daniel Prude. And so, you know, that is not going to change here. But here in this region, amidst all of this pain and struggle, is this amazing story. And yeah, I'm picking the brains of two really, really outstanding people in the industry, both on the food and the wine side. And Michael emailed to ask before the break, does La Compagnie or does Supernatural Lake offer Finger Lakes wines on the list? You know, Caleb, for people who don't know you, you know, you're someone who's a very, very important person in the world of wine, especially in Manhattan. And about 10 years ago, when I was writing a book on Finger Lakes wines, people would ask, like, do the coolest places pour Finger Lakes wines? Like, and I said, you know, it's starting to happen more. It would be great if it could get to be like a secret handshake wine in the coolest places in the world. And it's hard to crack into that. But, you know, certainly the region has done so many things. Maybe no region does 125 bonded wineries and everybody's doing perfect stuff. But the top tier is a different level now. And I'm curious to know, to Michael's answer, if you pour it here and if you pour it there.
Absolutely. I mean, I've always been inspired by what's happening up here. I mean, there's such a long growing history, you know, agriculturally speaking. This is one of the few regions that sort of kept grapes in the ground as well, even during Prohibition. So you didn't really lose that, which was a huge blow to the wine industry in America to, like, go through those, you know, like 10, 12 years of a lot of folks ripping up grapes and, like, you know, never passing on that lineage of farming grapes to their next generation. So, you know, the rebuild really started in the 50s and 60s up here, 70s, 80s. It kind of got, you know, another influx of energy. And then since then, you know, with the Farm Winery Act, everything, it's just been, like, booming. And the qualities come with it. You know, Cornell does a lot of great research and is in, you know, close coordination with some of the top growers in the area. And, like, they're just leapfrogging ahead of a lot of regions. So I think there's a high percentage of high quality here. And so we've always wanted to tell that story. I mean, I think sometimes it's easy to overlook something right in your backyard, you know, and I'm speaking from a New York City operator right now. But it's also just so nice to be able to, like, you know, drive up 4 hours. You know, everybody kind of says that, oh, you can be in, you know, France in 7 hours. You can be in Napa Valley in 4 hours. But, you know, they're not taking into account going to the airport and all that stuff. So literally 4 hours door to door to be in some of, you know, a world-class wine growing region is super special. And to be able to highlight and also just have the folks come down to the city, you know, like, we'd have events with winemakers. You know, Christopher Bates would come teach a class every once in a while from Element Winery and FLX Hospitality. You know, we'd highlight, you know, wines from Weimer and Red Newt and Redtail Ridge and all of our, you know, a lot of our friends in the area. So do we have wines down in the city? Absolutely. Is it a smaller percentage of our overall? It is. But, you know, we're definitely still making headway. But up here, we've, you know, fleshed that out probably tenfold in terms of what we offer. It's been really nice to kind of meet some new producers, you know, both cider and wine and also even spirits. So between all of that, we probably have at least, you know, 40, 50 different Finger Lakes beverage offerings up here, which we're super stoked to present to folks.
Now, when you look ahead in this industry, you know, you mentioned earlier this hour, Caleb, that what's going to happen in Manhattan or what could happen down there is a further spread of chains and a rolling back of, you know, more individualistic and interesting businesses. Nothing, I guess, against chains. It's just maybe more of the way of the world. But I think a lot of people agree with you that they'd like to avoid that. And yet we see some of your colleagues write very, very thoughtful pieces saying that by April, it was clear that there are a lot of restaurants that aren't going to come out the other side of this. There are probably some bars that are not going to come out the other side of this. Do you see it that way?
You know, I do, unfortunately. And I think there's two different things that are going to get people through this time. It's going to be deep pockets and a lot of ingenuity. And the places that have both are going to thrive. The places that have one or the other will probably make it through. And the places that sort of lack both, you know, sadly probably won't make it through. And I'm not saying anybody who goes out of business, you know, isn't innovative or whatever. Everybody has their own different, you know, circumstances going into this pandemic. And some places were just, you know, better prepared to handle it than others. But there's no question that there's going to be a huge loss in diversity of operators. And, you know, I'm not saying chains are bad, but, you know, there's certainly, you know, there's a reason people live in New York City. It's not so they can access all the stuff that you can access in the suburbs and have lower, you know, rent and all that. So what I do hope is that the landlords in the city wake up to the fact that rents are just insane. and they lower the prices. I do hope that, you know, both our patrons and the government acknowledge the fact that we are and have been essential workers, you know, for longer than just the time that people have talked about it. And that also the system has been kind of broken for a long time, you know, like the front of house thing, you know, it can get a lot of tips and can make a ton of money. And it's really hard for the back of house to make a fair earning. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can rebuild this restaurant industry stronger. You know, we hope to be leading that on the other side. You know, so there's a great opportunity to rebuild. But yeah, it's going to be a long process getting through that.
Has your rerouting to the Finger Lakes for several months, has that helped bridge what would be a very difficult gap?
You know, for sure. I mean, you know, if we would just stay in, there's a lot of different things. I think cash flow is super important to restaurants. Labor is super important to restaurants. And, you know, just even though we spent a little bit of money to open this up, it has been, you know, seemingly at least break even, if not slightly net positive, from a cash flow perspective. So that's helpful. Keeping our team employed and engaged and trying new things and building our brand even further and kind of just telling our story like more fully, I think is good for longevity. You know, once folks leave and kind of get a different job, they might never come back to the restaurant industry. And it's a huge loss to diners, because, you know, there's a lot of talent out there and, you know, such a unique experience is going out to eat and being taken care of by world-class professionals. And, you know, when that dries up, it's hard to train those, you know, people from scratch, right? That takes time. So, you know, we want to make sure we're keeping, or at least fighting our best fight to keep these folks employed and engaged and staying creative in this industry that we love.
Supernatural Lake on Cayuga Lake, supernaturallake.com, open through the end of October, so still time. And Eric, can you tell us what you hope maybe to see from either the dining public or even government? I mean, what needs to happen to prevent wide-scale closure? I mean, the kind of catastrophic losses that have been predicted in some quarters.
Well, that's definitely a valid question. It's really hard to say. I mean, I think it's a lot of the responsibility is on, you know, the citizens of the city and the region to be responsible. I mean, it's really in the hands of well, yes, operators and guests and diners. And I think people have to come together and be sensitive to each other's needs in order to move forward responsibly. I think it comes down to ownership. If we take ownership over what we're meant to do right now at this time, which can push this forward and eventually bypass, you know, the deep impacts of COVID. I think that's everyone needs to take a little bit of self ownership so that we can, you know, stay responsible and allow the government to, you know, release a little more line and a little more slack to allow, you know, us to open, allow restaurants to have more capacity. Because, yeah, like Caleb said, you need that cash flow. The margins in our industry are a fraction of other industries. I mean, if you're hitting 10% net profit, you're doing quite well. If you're hitting 5, you're still doing all right. And, you know, when you can only see 25% of your potential dining revenue, it's very difficult to maintain a business. And, you know, labor is expensive. We want to pay people more. We want to create opportunities for people to be there. And that's kind of what we're trying to do up here. And we hope to continue doing what we're doing in that framework when we get back to the city. But again, we need the revenue to come in. So, like, I think, yeah, also the understanding of diners and guests to potentially see that, you know, you might need to pay a little bit more to have the same experience because, you know, we can only do so much and charge the same prices. So just overall sensitivity to each other and to an industry and a little self-ownership, both governmentally and personally will probably go a long way.
Last minute or so, Caleb, not to get all sentimental, but I know it means a lot to you, and Eric's talking about how much it means when people come back, when people come and patronize the business. Have you thought about what it means to people who go out to eat for the first time in this pandemic and they're choosing you?
I mean, it's like just being able to I noticed it a lot, especially with the lack of it, like in those first 3 months, like how much life is lived within our four walls, you know, whether it's somebody visiting from another, you know, part of the world or celebrating an engagement or a wedding or a birthday or like, you know, people go out for special occasions and we're very fortunate that they come to us for some of those. You know, special occasions take on a new term, you know, now. And yeah, we've had a lot of folks that are like, you know, we've driven by a lot of places. We didn't want to go out to eat anywhere else, but you know what? We looked like you guys were doing the right thing. And we showed up and we were, you know, very pleased that that was the case. People's lives and livelihoods and nourishment and safety are in our hands. And we take that so seriously. And we're also so grateful when folks do choose to spend their time and money with us. And like, all we want to do is be good shepherds of that. And you know, thankfully folks have tended to think that that's what we're doing. So, happy to be doing it.
Well, I can't claim that I have a lot of experience in the restaurant industry, and I know it must be exhausting in normal times, let alone pandemic times. But I do think it's a remarkable story what you've done, and good luck to you through the end of October on Cayuga Lake and Interlake and at Supernatural Lake. Caleb, thanks for making the time for us.
Evan, thanks for having us.
And Eric Bolliard, a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Very grateful. Thanks.
A lot of people in this industry working really hard here, Manhattan, and around the world to get through this. It's going to take a lot of people working together to do that. Hope you do have a beautiful weekend. From Rob, Megan, I'm Evan. We will talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.